You are listening to 10 Wrestling's 2300 Wrestling Podcast with DB Richards and Sweet Tea Referee Dave Keener on Anchor FM, Spotify, and other leading platforms.
Hello, this is DB Richards from the 2300 Wrestling Podcast, and this season is dedicated to Bill Pollarino. Rest in peace, my friend. Welcome, everybody, to the 2300 Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, DB Richards, alongside my sweet tea referee, Dave Keener.
I mean, it's more like a Tahitian treat tonight instead of a sweet tea.
Dude, you always worry about the sweet tea. Why was that a sweet tea? I'm sorry.
I know. Oh, my God.
It's been weeks and weeks and weeks and
horrible.
Weeks, but you're still my sweet tea.
I mean, Wawa doesn't have the tea anymore. Like, I go in to get tea, and there's nothing there.
But you're still my sweet tea. Just right. Remember that.
But I hear our guest in the background laughing while he's on the phone.
Because he knows you're a Keener, and he's probably making fun of you. So, who do we have on today?
We have on today Rico de la Vega, because I can't roll. I can't do that roll the back of the tongue thing. No, I can't do it.
That's what your girlfriend tells you. You can't do it.
Wow. He went there already, you fat-looking, dopey mother.
Everybody's laughing. Holy crap. So, like, yesterday, we were at Super Crazy, and I was on the roll, and O-Dog and Denise were laughing the whole time. So, poor Keener over here. I only rib him. I don't rib anybody else, because he's my brother, and I just like to have fun with him.
Yeah, you're just my ride. I work. I do everything, and you drive me around.
Hey, I'm a good driver. You're lucky you got a ride. No, I'm just kidding. So, I always do the road trip. Yesterday, I was too tired, so I didn't go into his second show yesterday, just because I needed to sleep. I was that tired. Woke up and I saw.
I was at DCW in Felton, Delaware at the Delaware Auto Exchange.
Yeah, I was sleeping.
I refereed Super Crazy at 10 a.m. was the call time for a noon show. It was a great show. And then I went to Felton, Delaware to work for DCW in a cold, cold, cold building.
I'm so happy I didn't go in there. I had my heat, and watching the town.
But don't get me wrong, the Waffle House afterwards, always a great deal.
But it was cold. Cold.
Yeah,
cold.
The Waffle House was cold.
At least the food wasn't cold.
I mean, it's colder than a hooker's tit on the New York morning.
Oh, okay. Let's get into the storyline. We do have people out there that don't listen to wrestling. They don't know a lot of things about wrestling, but they like to listen to the podcast because they learn something about them. So, can we get a little background about you first?
Sure. Well, first of all, I appreciate you guys for having me on the show.
No problem.
You know, it's definitely, I can check that one off the bucket list when it comes to podcast.
Thank you.
But thank you, because you're like one of the first people on Facebook that I can come and chat to and like see how you're doing, and you do the same thing with everybody else, see everybody else. So we have to say thank you.
I got plenty of workers like that I talk to.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%, man. Open door policy with me. In regard to me, my history, I mean, I guess I could say, you know, I grew up watching wrestling. I knew that's what I wanted to do. Ended up going to the world famous Monster Factory. That's where I was trained at. And this was back in 2014. Ever since, ended up in the Midwest somehow. Now I am currently performing more so in the Midwest. I just did a show yesterday at the MFPW at the Monster Factory. As of now, I'm currently based in the Midwest. I work for AAW out there. I work for Galley Lucha Libre, a bunch of different organizations, but you know, you can't always permanently leave home, so you'll catch me here at the Monster Factory like once or twice a month.
So when you trained at the Monster Factory, was it Meanie and Bill that were the trainers?
When I was at the Monster Factory, when I just started, it was obviously Danny Cage was coach. QT Marshall was training us, as well as the Blue Meanie. Then Damian Priest obviously was there as well. He had a hand in my training too. My class included Matt Riddle. It included LSG. It included Shaheem Ali. It included a bunch of talent like that.
Great talent.
I guess I call it a class. That whole class that began around the same time that I did. Everybody's going to do great things, man, and I couldn't be prouder. Like, it's a bunch of us. So, yeah,
right.
But yeah, that's who, you could only be as good as whatever school you go to, and I tell everybody, man, if you're going to invest, definitely invest in a place like the Monster Factory or the Monster Factory itself, because you're going to get, bar none, the best foundation to professional wrestling, and the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I mean, we did something at the Monster Factory once where C.W. Anderson came in and did a seminar, and I was there too. I walked in the gym, and Louise, Damian Priest, was sitting there working out, and I walked up to him, and like, I literally looked up to him to shake his hand. Yeah. He's a big dude.
I remember that. It was about 4 or 5 years ago, I believe.
Yeah.
CW was over there. That was our class. We were all training there.
Yeah, because I went up with my brother, and we went and did ECWA after that with CW Anderson.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Wow, that's incredible. Time flies, man.
Right. My God.
Yeah, I only been to the Monster Factory once.
And it wasn't even for a Monster Factory show.
No, it was for that child molester guy. But we don't want to get there.
Yeah, you guys are killing me, man. You need to come out to a show.
Yeah, like, if he's booked, I can't go anywhere.
See, I'm reffing all over the place lately, and if I'm not booked on a Saturday night, I definitely got to get out to Danny and see Danny when Danny shows. Last time I saw Danny, I was working for the Phillies. I did a day game.
No, you saw him at Ring of Honor's pay-per-view.
Let me get to that.
Okay.
We were at Death Before Dishonor, and I walked up. I saw Danny sitting over there, and I walked up. He got up, gave me a hug, said, hi, how are you? What the fuck are you doing here? I'm like, well, I got them to the Phillies game, so I figured I'd come hang out and watch the show. He's like, awesome. Good to see you. He's like, my boy's in the ring. Like, yeah, I see Jacob in the ring now.
But it's fun. Like, I literally, like, Danny Cage is a really cool dude. He's like, here's my number. Call him. I need to get him on the podcast, too. And before he had to, like, do something and had to cancel it. But we'll get him back on at some time in the future.
When he had the long hair, he looks like the dude.
I thought you called him the dude.
Yeah, it totally does.
And I texted him. I'm like, dude, you're the dude. He goes, what do you mean? I'm like, you look like Jeff Bridges from The Big Lebowski. And I sent him a side-by-side, and he goes, Oh, shit. But Danny's a great dude.
Yeah, everybody's definitely a great dude. Everybody's a great dude to you. He's a great dude. He's a great dude.
I'm a dude. You're a dude.
We're all dudes.
Wouldn't you like to be a dude, too?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, my goodness.
See, we like to have fun on the show, too. You know what I mean?
Not your average, ordinary podcast.
Like, we want to hear stories. We want to hear about your career. We want to know about the awesome road stories you have. You know what I mean? You might have seen some, because I see a lot Ubering and Lyft, doing all that everywhere I go, and you see things or you hear stories and it's like, oh my gosh. But
there's plenty. I mean, you know, obviously through my journey that took me eventually to the, you know, working for ROH, working for different companies and stuff and all that stuff.
Hold on a minute, you're breaking up.
Some really cool things.
Hold up, you're breaking up.
Yeah, you're...
Okay, let me know.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, give me a second. They got plows out, so I gotta slow down real quick.
Yeah. Dude, be you're safe, man. Everybody needs to be safe.
100%. So basically, no. Like I was saying, just given through what I've experienced so far as like, you know, I definitely have stories. It just depends what we're talking about and stuff. But, you know, I've been fortunate enough to go from the factory to work for Ring of Honor, you know, doing their commentary, being able to, coexist and sit under the learning tree of a lot of very, like, you know, prominent commentators, prominent wrestlers, referees. I mean, you name it. It's definitely a good experience. And, you know, I humbly say that I've been fortunate enough to wrestle in Canada, to wrestle, you know, all across the country, to work for different promotions, prominent promotions, to be able to share a ring with, like, legends. And I'm like, sheesh, this is, it's been a good ride so far.
Oh, I totally understand. Like, if it wasn't for Dave and his brother, really, because I don't, I really don't talk to Mike, but if it wasn't for them two, I wouldn't have jumped in this rabbit hole they call pro wrestling like that. I might have been still that freaking loser fan going, oh, look at that guy. No, I'm just kidding. But
I enjoy it.
But, like, since I've been doing this podcast thing and people coming on my show and our show, I'm sorry. Yeah. Don't get upset. I mean,
getting to work and hang out with people like Rhett.
Oh, Rhett was fun.
Rhett Titus.
So we do.
Great
guy.
I love Rhett.
I love Rhett. Rhett's a great dude.
He's amazing. He's one of my closest friends, especially, like before ROH, I knew Rhett. Like, he would come to the factory all the time, man. I hit it off with him instantly. He's a great dude.
So we do, like, this Dave Pitcher thing. We go out to wrestlers because I do go by DB Richards on the show, but my real name is Dave, so we wear Dave stickers.
Okay.
Yes, and so we get wrestlers to put the sticker on and get in the picture because they want to be a Dave too. It's a little marketing scheme, you know what I mean?
Right, but the greatest story with that was we were at Icons back in, not the one that just passed, but the one before that. And I was talking to one of my buddies who's a ring announcer, Jason. He re-announces for ACPW, and his people brought in Gerald Briscoe. And Jerry's looking at us, and he sees we have Dave on. So he goes to grab a piece of paper.
But we told him the story first.
Right. So he goes to grab a piece of paper, and he goes to write Dave, and he goes to put it up. I'm like, wait. We got name tags for that.
We got name tags for that. We put it right on him.
Jerry Briscoe puts it on, and he goes, that's pretty freaking cool. So we were over with Jerry Briscoe. That's great.
So, like, Brett, we got Rhett to do it. And, like, one day, like, we were at a wrestling show. He's walked selling, going back. He turns his head. He goes, holy crap, it's the Daves.
It was at a dog show in Glassboro, New Jersey.
And then he gets back to selling again and walks back. And that's the funniest story about Rhett. It's like, it's holy the Daves.
he broke kayfabe just for that little bit.
Spotted you from a mile away, huh?
Yeah. Right. We're sitting there and we're talking to
We were talking to Mark Masson.
And we were talking to Dave.
We were talking to Brian. We were talking to Brian.
Right. And we're just sitting there and we're talking.
And we saw Rhett walk out.
And Rhett walks by. But Rhett has his hand out. He's selling. He stops. He looks up. He goes, Dave's. Goes back and starts selling again.
That's what we just said.
Right. No, but I know. But just, it was
he saw, he told the story again. So I'm keeping in this on this whole thing. But earlier in the day, he was covering up. And I noticed his shirt.
I noticed the boots. I knew it was him.
Like, because he wasn't supposed to be there. Right. But he went out there to talk to the guy playing the music. And Alfred, and I'm like, that looks like Rhett. And he goes, how do you know that looks like Rhett? I'm like, it's the shirt. He goes, what do you mean the shirt? I pulled out the picture. He did the My Day picture with us. It's like this shirt.
Yeah.
Like, look at the boots. That's him.
That's him. We didn't say anything to anybody. Everybody's no. Like, who is that? Who is that? I was like, it's nobody. Don't worry about it.
I'm not telling you.
We can keep everything. Oh, we can keep everything together. But this is about you, not Rhett Titus. But hey, we like to bring stuff in stories and tell you stories that hey, it's fun. So Dave loves this question. He likes to bring it up first, and so he wants to know how did we get there.
I seriously believe that there's no storyline with wrestling anymore. Like I want to know why. Why are we doing a ladder match? Why are we doing a light pole match? Why are we doing a death match? Why there's no build up anymore? Like it's automatically like, Rico, you're going to work this guy and you're doing a light bulb match. Well, why?
Wow, so you really opened up Pandora's box with that one.
Yes, right. We are good at that.
Oh, yeah. So do you believe that buildup is gone?
Not completely.
Okay.
So let me kind of set it up here. I am one of those, I don't know, I guess. A lot of people tend to call that old school mentality. I don't know if that's just like a millennial thing or like, you know, the equivalent of a boomer. You know what I mean? But old school is where our roots are. Now, yes. I believe in evolution. We should evolve. We should always evolve. But that evolution does not mean that the forefront of professional wrestling and the match itself should be the moves that are being made. There shouldn't be moves being made without meaning behind it. Again, getting to that point about no storylines in wrestling. I feel that there aren't storylines, and I think that it has to do with so many people trying to, as they say in the business, get their shit in and get as many moves over as possible so they can get that little 12-second gift. And get themselves over that way because it's a lot harder for somebody to tell a story in the ring just by using psychology, facial expression, a move, let it marinate as opposed to go from move to move to move. Nobody does that because, in my opinion, I just feel we live in a microwave society. You know, we could take a Hot Pocket, pop it in the microwave, and have it done in 2 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, say, maybe 60 years ago, shit, you were fucking boiling a pot of soup, you know what I mean? And it took a lot longer than just nuking it. We live in a society that's very, it's catered to in that sense. So I just feel that the importance is put more on the individual who's putting the match together where they just want to get their shit in and do, hey, I got to get this move out. I got to get this thing out. I got to make this look good as opposed to saying, hey, we got to make sure that we build up towards this move. We got to make sure that we do this move because of this. Oh, I began working your leg, so let me go ahead and have to finish, do something with a submission to that leg. Like, there's none of that anymore. And it's kind of hard to, in my opinion, to suspend disbelief when, you know, you're not giving the audience those silent cues, so to speak, for them to react a certain way, to build, to foreshadow. So that way, the payoff, when the match is finished, you know, the crowd goes home happy. Yeah. But that's just me.
Right. Like, dude, I don't know if you know O-Dog, but we had a conference, O-Dog.
O-Dog.
Yeah.
I've heard of him.
Okay. I worked his show yesterday at Super Crazy, and we had the conversation that Ric Flair, Curry Von Erich, Hogan, Warrior, done the same match 30 times. Stick to what you know. Don't try to do anything new. Stick to what you know. know. Hogan's done the same match 45 times and nobody noticed.
And I guarantee all of us could call his match.
Right.
To the T. You know when the Hulk up is going to come. You know we set, when he's setting up for the wave the finger in your face, tell you no, and then the comeback. Like, you know these intricacies within his match. It's not predictability. It's having a formula and a formula that works. Because even though that the people know that it's coming to a certain extent, they are still out of their seat fucking going nuts.
It's
that
still
element,
over.
In my opinion, is gone. You know?
My favorite wrestler in the world, Mr. Ooh-la-la, always says less is more.
Yes, 100%. And that's the mentality that, you know, I was taught coming up. The younger guys, I mean, they're told this stuff, but like I said, it's more about getting their shit in. It's not a knock at the younger guys. It's more of a knock at, I don't know. See, this is where it kind of gets a little twisted, because you don't want to say the wrong thing and you don't want to necessarily put blame on or a general blanket statement on an entire group of people, because it's not the younger guys, so to speak. I just feel that there's not enough emphasis put on the psychology, emphasis put in the in storylines and things like that anymore by coaches, you know?
Yeah.
I always brag about the fact that I went to the Monster Factory. Not because, I mean, yeah, it's great that a lot of, like, you know, talented individuals came from there, but it's not solely because of that, because I feel I have a great foundation when it comes to wrestling. I have great psychology when it comes to wrestling. I will entertain the shit out of people because we're pretty much taught from day one. It's about that. The crowd comes first. It's not about getting your shit in. You look good, but you have to convey a story, you know? To me, that's what it's about, but nobody's putting that emphasis on it anymore. And I think, you know, it kind of gets lost as we go from, say, generation to generation.
Yeah. Do you think referees should learn medical, like CPR if they're in the ring?
I don't think it should be required, so to speak, but it's definitely a great thing to have as far as a referee goes. A great asset for anybody to have. You know, I went to school to become an EMT. So at one point I was CPR certified. Just having that on your resume alone, you know, kind of kicks you up your notches. If you're a referee that knows CPR or that knows some type of first aid, it's going to up the ante for a lot of others where they'll have to step it up. But at the end of the day, I just feel it's for the greater good anyway. You know, should something go wrong, right, you know, in the ring, you want all parties involved to be paired. You know, it's more likely that the referee is going to have to attend the situation as opposed to one of the wrestlers that were just freaking, you know, jumping all around and fucking tired of shit. You know what I mean?
Yes. You know, I ref and I am certified CPR, first aid, everything. And in my bag is always a mask and gloves, because no matter what happens, I always have them just in case.
Yeah, I'd like to ask that question because wrestlers do mess up sometimes and hit the ropes, and we've seen that with a bunch of wrestlers recently doing a move wrong, hoping somebody would be around to help. You know,
no
what
matter
I mean?
What show I'm at, there's gloves in my pocket
always. But I always care about
that.
Matter of fact,
you got them right now.
Yeah. Always gloves in my pocket.
But that's the whole thing. You know, I mean, you always think about safety first.
And right. Well, my day job is I'm a home health aide, so I'm inside the house is working with people, you know.
Yes.
So the gloves always have to be there within reach.
Yeah.
You never know what happens.
Yeah, I always ask that. I haven't did that question for a minute. I just wanted to see what you will say. But our buddy right here misread trained. He thought it said trainer, so that's why I asked that question. My
fault.
Oh,
no.
Brian, stick
to audio.
I wouldn't
give myself that much credit. I know some shit, but yeah, by no means do I want to claim being a trainer, because I have a shit ton to learn, brother. That's how I look at it, man. I've been in this game for 8 years already. I still have a long ways to go, and I am still learning every single second that passed by, every single match.
Who was it that we were talking to? I forget what wrestler it was, and they had said, doesn't matter how long you've been in the business or how long you've been wrestling, there's always something new that you can learn.
Oh, yeah.
I think, what was it, Scorpio that said that?
Who?
Scorpio.
Yeah, I think it was
Scorpio.
Scorpio?
Yeah, it was Scorpio. Cold, yeah. Who became a great friend.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. He's great.
Oh, yeah, Skaggs is fucking awesome.
Oh, gosh. It was kind of funny. Like, I was at somewhere, and he goes, I remember you. I'm like, I remember you, too.
we were leaving the Icons because he wasn't there for Icons, but he was there for the show at night. And I said, I don't mean to interrupt. Shook his hand, gave him a hug. He's like, you know, staying? I'm like, nah, man, I'm leaving. I got my own show. He's like, all right, brother, nice to see you. Call me, text me later. Like, all right.
Yeah, man, that's the key. Guys like that, you know, humble guys like that, they always get remembered.
I mean, for somebody somebody that's a former WCW World Tag Team Champion, former ECW Television Tag Team World Champion, one of the most humblest guys I've ever met. Between him and Buff, he was cool too.
So I like to, Buff Bagwell was cool. Yeah, he was really cool.
He was cool to talk to. And he stood there with us throughout the whole con, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So we like to play a couple games called Table of Five. No, you don't do that yet.
Not yet.
So
that's for a different question.
Relax. You're the fifth person at the table. So, and I'm going to tell you this is going to be a theme, and you can't put Danny Cage in
there. Uh-oh.
Okay?
All right.
So you can put...
Well, if you're doing that, then I already know two people is going to list for him and not saying them, no.
Don't say any names, no.
So you want
to
do...
He likes to do this. He wants to play the game all the time.
So Table of Five, you want to do Monster Factory wrestlers.
Yes, but here's the thing. You're the fifth person. You need to put four people in that in them seats.
Other than Danny Cage.
Can't pick Danny Cage.
So you can't put the boss in there?
Can't put the boss in there. Because everybody's going to put the boss in there. We know he will be sitting at your table anyway. Right. So that's why we're taking him out.
All right, so four people other than Danny Cage.
Okay, four people other than Danny Cage at that table. And what's the purpose?
Just to have fun.
Factory Boys. Go have a beer. Like, did you ever see the show Table for Five or Table for Three? No, there is a Table for Five.
I think it's Table
for Three. Like a wrestling one?
Yeah, like a wrestling one, yeah.
They're having a conversation.
Right.
Eating
so
dinner,
you're the fifth one.
Drinking.
Four the people other than Danny Cage.
Okay, to have a conversation about wrestling or just...
Whatever you want.
Whatever you want to do. Like, you're going to have a beer with them, sit around, and have a steak and a...
It's like standing around like in King of the Hill's entrance thing. Yeah. You guys going, yep,
And dang on, get over there and dang on.
Now, mind you, I have done this before with these people, so if I could bring it back, man, to be honest, and be able to have a conversation and just shoot the shit, those four chairs, I would probably end up filling them with probably Matt Riddle, Luis, Damian Priest, so Matt, Damian, the Blue Meanie, I'd have to throw Meanie in there for sure. So I got Matt, Luis, Meanie.
Great guy. Not to cut you off or interrupt, but we did the Icons back in December, and Meanie shows up in a blue Santa outfit.
Holy shit. I saw the pictures you posted.
Right, and Tracy is in like a blue Mrs. Claus outfit.
Yeah, Tracy's amazing, man. She rocked. That's my girl right there.
Yeah, they're both awesome.
Oh, yeah.
All right, fourth one.
Oh, yeah, fourth chair. So right now, we're shooting the shit with Meanie, with Damian Priest, with Riddle. I think the fourth person that I'd sit down there... just for a good laugh, would be Nick Camarado.
There you go.
And congratulations to Nick Camarado.
For?
Say what?
Being engaged.
Oh yeah.
Him and Becky Phillips got engaged.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, a while back. They did it at MCW.
Right. So.
Yeah, Nick's a great guy, man.
Yeah, oh yeah. Real quick, I have a Meanie story for you. So I went to a concert out in Philly on South Street, and I see Meanie up there in the Starbucks up top. Him and Tracy are having coffee, and they're talking, whatever. And my friends are like, let's go up and say, I'm like, no, let him enjoy. Don't be a fan like that. Let him enjoy. I see him 3 days later, and he goes, motherfucker, you're not a fan, though. You could have came up and said hi. I'm like, you're right.
I got a Meanie story, too.
Yeah, man. Meanie's one of the best people, man. I love him. He's one of the best people, most fucking down-to-earth people to talk to.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he's always here for that cheap popping catering, so.
It's true. No, so you were in Ring of Honor doing commentating. How was that?
It was pretty cool, man. I started working with them in 2015. Just started as ring crew. When Silas Young had come to the Monster Factory to do a show, him and I hit it off. You know, we started shooting the shit or whatnot. Next time they were in town, he hits me up. He's like, hey, dude, you want to come by? You know, say hi to the boys and stuff. And at that point, I was like really green. Like, I was about a year in. So I was very hesitant. Like, oh, man, I don't want to get in trouble. You know, people don't know me like that. I don't want to step on toes. Whatever. He's like, no, don't worry. You're with me. Come on, brother. I'm like, all right, sweet. So I ended up showing up. I started with Ring Crew there. You know, you're talking about me, Burger, Rhett, Ken Phoenix. You know, we're just there just kind of helping out. We were all still rather young in the game. So I started out with them doing Ring Crew. Eventually, I did about tryouts with them as a wrestler and as a commentator. So I got to do both. They were really impressed by my promo. Mm-hmm. You know, I could kind of, you know, I could speak on the fly. I could go head-to-head with a lot of people on the mic, so they saw that in my promos, and it wasn't too long after the second tryout that Kevin Kelly and Delirious reached out to me, and they're like, hey, dude, you know, we see you at the shows, you're willing to travel with us and stuff. We see the effort you put in. We got a spot. Do you want to do bilingual commentary? I was like, fuck yeah. So I was going to do the pay-per-views in Spanish, the Spanish simulcast. So I would do those. And then Future of Honor and Women of Honor, I'd be doing commentary with Ian Riccaboni, another factory student. And turned out, I mean, yeah, I started doing all the pay-per-views for the Spanish speakers. I was doing Ring of Honor, Future of Honor and Women of Honor, as well as I did a few episodes for TV as well. But just getting the experience and traveling with them, sitting under Kevin Kelly, sitting under Ian Riccaboni, I mean, that in itself is just like really, really like, it's a treasure trove of knowledge when it comes to commentary, the delivery, how and when you should say things. I mean, it's all a psychology to it, just like wrestling. Right. So I really enjoyed my time.
It's you know, and it's really cool watching the Future of Honor when I see friends that I've worked with and they get bigger, like Eric Martin, who
yeah, 100%.
Right.
100%. And it's been able really to call, cool. Yeah, I called friends matches, you know, and that right there is when it started hitting me. I'm like, fuck, man, I'm literally part of their history now. I'm calling this match. Like, I called Nick's first Future of Honor match. I called one of Luis's matches. I called, like, that, you know, that in itself, I'm like, you can't erase that, man. Like, it's like me now becoming a wrestler. One of the biggest pieces of advice that I will say this quick story, I hold this dear to me. Damian Priest, when I started at the factory, him and I became really tight. Like, that was like some big brother shit. Like, he always looked out for me. He always had my best interests, always helped me out. He's a fucking great guy, and there's not a ill thing I would say about him. One of the first pieces of advice when I started at Ring of Honor, we were hanging out, we were at his place, we were at his place, and we sat down, we were just talking, and he's like, hey, dude, so it's official. They had just published an article with me, you know, talking about how I'm, you know, part of the company now. And it's like, official, man, just know any little thing you say or do from now on, it's going to get looked at by everybody and anybody. And if anybody wants to damage you, they're going to do it. Just remember, you can type your name into Google and things will come up that are pertaining to you because you are the only Rico de la Vega. And I was like, wow. I was like, that's some deep shit, bro. But like, he's right, you know? You now have been able to leave your legacy, and it's up to you at that point if you're going to leave a good legacy or if you're going to leave like a spill of shit along the way, you know? So I hold that very high regard. You know, so when it comes to things like that, the fact that I've been able to call, you know, matches for him, call matches for Nick, call matches for a lot of different people that are now on that bigger stage, to me, that's a history that cannot be erased whether they like it or not, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, our history was
just... He just answered another question, too.
Yeah, you answered a question into it, so we didn't have to say it. So right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's cool to go out there and like referee matches and stuff like that with these new up and comers and then see them years later on AEW and WWE and Ring of Honor and stuff like that. Like, I reffed Eric Martin's matches before he was in Future of Honor.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like really cool to see these guys. Like, hey, I knew you when you were on the small time. And now you're getting big time.
And it wasn't for you telling Brian, it's like, hey, DB can do commentating with Dave Adams.
And now you're getting bigger gigs, too. You're welcome.
Hey, yeah. I go down to 1CW and do little podcast stuff with people and do mini little interviews. It's so fun. You know what I mean? I enjoy doing this. And my goal is to hit 200 interviews in this year.
And I mean, this is 144, so.
No, it could be 45, 145.
Well, I mean, 145, but we're getting there. We're about ready to hit season 3.
Yeah, we're in season 3.
Yeah, we're in season 3 now.
We're in season 3.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty awesome, fellas. Shit.
Thank you. Yeah, and I mean, not to toot our own horns. We've had guys.
You have a horn?
Well, it's in the bedroom.
Okay.
We've had guys. We've had second generation in Eric Watts. And people go, who? Who's Eric Watts? I'm like, go learn your history. Ken Dixon. Chris Hamrick.
C.W. Anderson.
C.W. Anderson. Louis Dangerously, Sign Guy Dudley, Bay Ragney, Chubby Dudley, and they all keep coming and hanging out. And so we appreciate the workers, from the announcers to the refs to the wrestlers. Thank you for coming on our show, and thank you, Rico, for coming on our show as well.
Don't forget Red Titus, guys. What is wrong with you?
He was our season for Red Titus, yes.
Nah, for sure. Nah, I appreciate you guys just for having a platform where we can kind of relax and just be ourselves and get to talk about some good shit. You know, just wrestling as a whole. You know, we that's the glue that binds us all. So I'm glad that we have this platform that we can go ahead and, you know, share our love and appreciation.
Like, we have a mutual friend, and he's like, you need to get bigger names on because people don't know who these are. I'm like, that's why we're putting on our show, so that you do know who they are, so you can get to know who they are.
Yes, that's true.
Right.
Yeah. But, like, I like this question. I like to answer this question or give questions out and all that cool stuff. So, like, when my family, like, I told them, like, I love wrestling, and this is what I'm going to do with my podcast and all that. And when you started wrestling, how was your parents telling them what you wanted to do in life?
My mom, I mean, she was automatically on board. If it wasn't for my mom, I wouldn't have covered wrestling, to be honest. I mean, I would have, but when I did, it was because of her. She put it on TV, and she was, like, pointing it out, and I was just, like, awestruck. And I'll never forget one of the first people that I saw, the Ultimate Warrior, ran across the screen, and I was like, holy shit. Like, it's just this green streak of a man just fucking running around a ring and shaking the ropes. I'm like, okay, you got me. What's going on here? Then you got the guy that comes out afterward who's just as colorful, you know, maybe a little less toned down as far as, like, you know, running around and shit, but okay, these guys are about to get it in. This is going to be exciting. So yeah, I mean, ever since then, she's the one that put me on wrestling. So once she found out that I was training, you know, she was like, oh wow, good for you, you know, because that's initially, all right, let's see if he's going to stick with it, because, you know, I think that goes through every parent's head.
Yeah.
But she was supportive nonetheless. But no, once she saw me making waves and then got to see me on television and all these different things happening, I was like, yeah, this is getting pretty serious. If she's like, yeah, I'm glad you stuck with it. I knew you had something to contribute to that world. I just didn't know what it was yet. And I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go. So even to this day, you know, still going strong, or, you know, trying to get to the next level, so to speak. And, you know, she's still supportive. All the people that have supported me, they're still there with me.
That is awesome.
You know, I say it time and time again, my mom hated the fact that both me and my brother were doing this. My mom went to one show, and my brother took a powerbomb from Derek Domino, and nope,
oh, wow.
Never again.
And meanwhile, an all Keener story. No, I'm just kidding.
At least she didn't fall asleep.
Because we're going to go right into that story right now, road trip stories. I love road trip stories. So the sleeping in the back of the car thing was a story.
We were on the road, and we were we were doing a show for a company called PWF up in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. And it was back when a guy named Steve Carino was running the company. Gangrel comes up. He does a main event spot. We're on our way home, and he falls asleep in the car.
So here's the thing that why I pick on him now. So we were trying to learn how to do interviews, how we're going to do everything. Because this was like, let's ask Keener, because Keener is in the wrestling business. Let's do an interview with him and try it out. And, like, it's not a bad idea. Let's do it. And I asked him about a road trip story. He goes, Gangrel fell asleep. He didn't say anything else. He just said, Gangrel fell asleep. And I'm like,
I mean,
and
the phone could have cut in and out. You never know.
And then I'm like, and he goes, oh, that's it. That's the story. And then I'm like, oh, okay.
I mean, you have a road trip story too.
Yeah, I fell asleep in the back of the car.
No, Frankie Picard.
No, like, that's sort of a little red back and forth. Yeah, I do have a Frankie Picard. And story, Frankie Picard hit my heater on my car.
And he fell asleep.
And fell asleep.
In your car.
In my car, yes.
Oh, man. Good old Frankie.
Oh, yeah. But you see.
Nothing but love for Frankie, though. Nothing but love.
He's my first interview we did for a podcast. So
the other podcast.
Yes. That means a lot to me. Means a lot when we started everything out and all that. And then Frankie fell asleep. And then you got Devin Moore and Drew Blood in the back, rolling down the windows because it was so hot. And I'm like, how do I wake up somebody I just met? You know what I mean? Like,
very, very careful.
Yes. I never. So I'm like,
no, wait, not to cut you off. Mind you, it's snowing outside.
Yes, it was snowing up in Magic.
They went up to Pro Wrestling Magic.
Yeah, that's where that's where Brian Pillman took a chop. So,
oh, the one from Math.
Yeah, from Math. Oh, yeah. So like, we're driving back and all, and I'm like, how do I wake this guy up? And then like 5 minutes later, like then he goes, it's hot in here.
It's hot in here, brother. What are you doing, man? Come on.
I was like, you put
the heat on. Come on, brother. What are you doing?
I was like, oh, you put your knee to the heater.
Wait a minute, stop. He told you the story, Brian?
Yes. I've heard the story so many times.
It's still funny.
What you're saying it is just like...
Or is that a good impersonation of him?
That's a little good.
Okay. So our sound guy is really good friends with Frankie.
Okay.
So, and Frankie's told him the story numerous times.
And I'm like, I didn't know how to wake you up. He's like, I'm sorry. And that's the fun part of the story.
It's okay, brother. Come on. Let's go get some McDonald's. right.
But my other road stories is with this guy right here. And don't ever let him touch your radio because it pisses me off.
Wow. You didn't say anything yesterday when I touched it. Yeah.
Because I was tired. I didn't care. Wow. Oh, yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. You woke up again. So we went all the way up. I never told this story ever on the air.
Which one?
The wallet story. I was so pissed off. Oh, that wallet story.
I wasn't there for that.
I know. I went up with Justin and George right here.
I was working.
So we stopped at one of, Jersey Mike's? All the way up to Titan. We went to
Titan. Ocean County, New Jersey.
Yeah, we were going up there for Outside Doors, the show. So we went. We stopped at Jersey Mike's.
Was that the Goddesses show you guys went to without me?
Yes. I think so. Yeah, it was. Right. So I put down my wallet. I'm not paying attention. You know what I mean? I put it down. I filled my drink and we went outside. George was the last person to order food. Didn't say anything. We get all the way up to Titan and out for nowhere. I'm like, where's my wallet? I'm going like this because I have Justin's money. I'm like, oh my gosh, where's my wallet? Can't find the wallet anywhere. And George goes, oh, I saw it at Jersey Mike's. And I'm like, what? Why you didn't tell me? He goes, oh, I didn't want to bother anybody.
Keep in mind, the show was only around the corner.
What's that?
Keep in mind, the show was only right around the corner.
It is around the corner. But
not the point, though.
Not the point. You know what I mean? But thank God the people after him picked up the wallet, gave it to the people there. When I got back, they're like, you left something, didn't you? I'm like, yes, I did. But he didn't tell me anything till we got there that I left the wallet. He goes, oh, I didn't know.
But you saw the wallet.
You know I was before you. You could have went, hey, you left your wallet in there. At least I paid for my food. Okay.
Wow.
So do you have any road stories?
All that to lead into a rib story.
Yeah, yeah. Road story and a rib story.
Two for one.
Two for one right there.
I feel so special.
Not your ordinary average podcast.
No, that's dope, man. You got to have stories, man. Without the stories, trust me, it's, you know, you always want to think of the end goal, but the stories, the getting there, that's the actual fun part, man. That's where all the good shit happens. The payoff is going to be that end goal, but that in between, man, you take that shit for granted. Before you know it, you want to go right back to where you were, you know?
We really did get to it. Yeah, right. I was waiting for a road story, but okay.
Moving on.
My bad.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're fine.
But it makes sense. You're like, it's the truth right there. Like, if you don't have a story, then
why tell it?
Yeah, but I got tons of stories. Yeah. I can write a book.
Yeah, I'm trying to associate things, and I'm like, fuck, there's not anything that I can segue any story yet. Like, fuck.
But we got time. You can come back and just like, I got a story, and be like, oh, okay, cool, let's listen to it.
Just don't pull a Chris Hamrick when we go, all right, hey, see you later. 2 seconds later, he calls, you ready for round two, motherfucker?
Holy shit.
We had to send that out. We had to send some of the
Chris,
stuff.
Chris is a great dude and a great friend.
Yeah, we had to send your list of interviews, and you can one day go, I want to listen to this episode right here.
Like, wow.
They're crazy. You want to do that? You want to do
Let's
that?
Let's do that.
You want to do that?
Let's do that.
Shit. Uh-oh. So uh-oh. We played.
Rico's like, oh, shit. What do they got for me now? Fuck.
So there's a bunch of
me.
Little things in this container I have here. A bunch of questions or...
What kind of questions are there?
Or pick one of these two things or...
But what kind of questions are they?
There are a lot of questions. Oh, you want me to go right into...
What kind of questions are they?
The five questions of doom.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's now time to play the five questions of doom with Rico Del Vega.
Oh my gosh.
Now, mind you, okay, all these questions are non-wrestling related.
Ah, fuck. Then you guys are just straight fucking me.
With the poll.
I know.
Are you ready? Question number one.
Heathcliff or Garfield?
Ooh.
Heathcliff.
Heathcliff. He's the only one they know.
That's Heathcliff, brother.
Yeah, Heathcliff.
You gotta understand, man. I love don't get me wrong, I love them both. You got Garfield. Who doesn't love a cat that fucking is a smartass and eats pasta and basically anything that comes in front of him?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. I'm cool with that. However, you're talking about Heathcliff. You're talking about a cat who survived the slums of the junkyard to be domesticated, living with, you know, know, an actual family, but still goes back to the hood in the junkyard to chill with his, you know, his friends.
He,
you know,
survived you got a Fat Cat
on stage. They got the badass fucking junkyard car. Come on, man. And he's yes. got the chick with the leg warmers, the cat with the leg warmers. You can't have that. And yeah. the theme song's pretty fire.
Heathcliff. Yeah. Are you ready for a question?
Real quick. Are your windows shut? Are your windows shut?
Yeah, sure.
Because it's snowing.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, fuck that noise.
Yeah, right?
He's like, I just found out it's snowing. Okay.
Question number two.
Favorite 80s movie?
Oh, man. See, fuck, you can't narrow it down to one.
You know, he has a point. If you asked me that question, I would just go John Hughes. That's my answer.
Hey, you know what? I was going to do more genres. That definitely is going to be a genre. You know, any 80s teen movie, like Coming of Age, like, you know, fucking Ferris Bueller, 16 Candles, like all them shit. Like, yeah, that definitely
Breakfast
is in a category.
John Hughes.
Breakfast, hell yeah.
But they're like, in like, here. They're in here already. Like,
favorite John Hughes movie.
Dude, it's in.
Is it in there?
Yeah, it's in there somewhere.
So it's like Prego.
Yes.
It's in there.
It's in there. Yes.
And they're like swimwear, man.
There you go.
But, you know, you have to think, you know, fucking, you got bangers like those. If you're looking for something a bit more serious, I have to go with, and I think that's probably every Hispanic boy my age, I would have to say Scarface. I mean, I love the buildup. Look, Rico de la Vega in itself is kind of embodies that. You know, he's from the gutter. He rose above all the bullshit to become the cartel kingpin, to become somebody of importance.
Right,
you know?
But the only thing I thought that was funny about that movie was oh god, who played Scarface? What was his name? Al Pacino. Here's an out and about pure Italian guy, pure Italian, playing a Spanish crime boss. It was great. It was one of the best role reversals I've ever seen.
How genius was that? And he fucking killed right. it. He killed it.
See, I liked him in Kalita's Way, but that's me.
Oh,
that was,
oh yeah, he plays a Puerto Rican there.
Right.
Same shit.
Was that? Yeah. And then, I mean, if I'm going good Spanish movies or Spanish actors, I always go with James Olmos.
Oh, Edward James Olmos.
Edward James
yeah,
Olmos, yeah. Amazing actor.
Loved him in, why can't I think of the movie?
Selena?
No, not that one.
Selena, 187.
The one where he played
he's the teacher.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What was that one?
Was it 187?
Stand and Deliver. Yeah, yeah.
Stand and Deliver. There it is.
That's one of my favorite
movies. Stand and Deliver.
Love that movie.
That one and American Me.
Yes. American Me, yes.
Yes.
I own all the movies anyway, so it's all good.
Yeah. You can't mention American Me without mentioning Blood In, Blood Out. Let's just put that on.
Right.
There we go, yeah. Ready for
question number three.
Ninja Turtles or Power Rangers?
Ninja Turtles.
I just bought the whole season.
T-U-R-T-L-E Power. I was watching the old ones the other night.
After I would come home from school, dude, it'd be Ninja Turtles at 4:30. Religiously. There was nobody taking me away from that TV. It was the same concept. When it came to Ninja Turtles, it was the same thing as like me watching Raw. You're not taking me away from that television.
No.
But Ninja Turtles all day. I had all the figures. I had all, you know, it had a great story. You know, four turtles, mutagen, they grow, they kick ass. You know, the Power Rangers was just a bunch of, I couldn't relate to the Power Rangers because they're over here having fucking juice bars in their high school. I didn't grow up like that, you know. I'm built a little different. So I couldn't really be relatable to a bunch of rich kids, you know, throwing on some outfits and, hey, Dragon Zord, all that shit. Not to say it was a bad show because I fucked with it, but
right.
If I had to pick one, it's definitely Turtles all day.
Oh, yeah.
Go, Ninja, go. What are you going to say, Brian?
Damn right.
So I got a question.
Kevin Nash.
I got a question.
Yes.
Who's your favorite turtle?
So, favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, Michelangelo.
I'm a Donatello guy all day.
I am too.
Simple weapon, he had a stick, and he was smart. So not only could he kick ass, but he could fucking come up with something that'll kick your ass even better.
It's true.
I mean, Corey Feldman was in that movie, so.
So, like you were talking about going home after school and all that, I had to watch DuckTales, Tailspin.
Yeah, that hour and a half of cartoons. Tailspin, DuckTales,
yeah.
Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers.
Chip and Dale's and Darkwing Duck.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Disney, that used to come on right after school. But yeah, right. I always left that 4:30 spot. The 4:30 spot belongs to fucking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Come home, wait, watch so cartoons.
You guys are from the area. I'll never forget. And I hate that this is gonna sound very old school, but I always remember switching from PHL 17, where they would give Darkwing Duck and all those, over to Philly 57 when it was Philly 57 to watch Turtles. Like, that's my memory.
Wow. Local boy.
Yes,
because I grew up poor. I didn't have cable. Well, I don't remember that shit.
Yeah, you could probably edit this out. Where did you grow up?
Man, that's digging deep. But I don't mind saying it. After I came from Puerto Rico, okay. I ended up in North New Jersey, and I lived there for about a few months before I came down to Paulsboro. So literally grew up where the Monster Factory is at.
We were just there. Like, literally, in that area. Yeah. We were in Williamstown. We were in Westville.
Yeah.
Right there. That's where Super Crazy is, right there in Deptford.
Yeah, he's a local guy.
Yeah,
right there.
I grew up in Paulsboro. Went to Paulsboro High School the whole nine. I moved away. I'm just one of those people, man. I can't. I'm a firm believer in order for you to grow, you need to expand your horizon,
right.
And that means geographically as well. I've lived many places. You know, I went from Jersey to North Carolina to Virginia to Miami to Philly to Brooklyn to Allentown to fucking now I'm in Green Bay, Wisconsin. You know, of all places. But you gotta go where you said you're
in Allentown. Did you go up to WXW?
I know the guys over there. Yeah, I know the guys over there. I actually lived in Whitehall at the time because me and Riddle, we were rooming together. So right. I was living in Whitehall. So I got real familiar with the local scene there for a little bit. I was actually rode up to a few shows with Dakota.
I know Mike.
Obviously, I know, Philly's Finest, so South Philly's Finest, so, Jimmy and Luca, they're always been great guys Jimmy. With me, and they're WXW guys. So.
Real quick, not to interrupt, I want to send my sincerest condolences out to Jimmy Conway.
Just about to say that as well, I haven't gotten to speak to the brother, because, obviously this is not something that, he's probably getting bombarded by a bunch of people. But
I don't want to bother him, but I just want to send it out.
For sure, if you hear this, man, my sincerest condolences, because I know Ma was very special to him, amongst a lot of other people, and I'm pretty sure everybody who she graced with her presence is going to remember that, so... Keep your head up, homie, and, we're here, man. Wrestling's here. We got you.
Right. So, a friend of mine also trained up there with WXW. I don't know if you know him. You know a guy named Ethan Essex?
You know how wrestling is, man. I probably have heard of him. Not sure if I've crossed paths.
You never know, though, but he was up there. So, moving on. We kind of sidetracked him, but still. Yeah,
big sidetracked. I'm waiting for question number four. But, holy crap.
All right, you said it. So, question number four is...
Apple or Android?
I thought you were going to say apples or bananas.
Yeah, I was going to say, hey. No, definitely Apple products, man. It is what it is. I've had both. So it's not nothing about being biased. I started out with Apple, ended up making a change twice to Android. First time, was not impressed. I was like, fuck it. Let me give it another shot. Let me see what's up. Went to Android. Dude, when you take pictures and every person in your picture looks like somebody from Minecraft, it's a problem.
I have an Android. I like my Android.
We're not going to take this podcast to shit on Android. However, I do have my preference, and Apple just does everything.
Everybody
Apple,
in the studio has got an Android.
I have an Android.
That's a struggle phone, man. You got to go through the struggle a little bit. You'll wake up soon. Don't worry.
You have to see the pictures now. They're so much better.
Anybody else got a spoon? Because he's just stirring the pot.
Okay, question number five. Bugs Bunny or Mickey Mouse?
Bugs all day. Because Mickey's too restricted. Mickey, he's a Disney character, so he's not going to be as badass. Bugs is just, look what he did to Elmer Fudd. Look how he outsmarted everybody. He's a boss.
Oh, my darn. Let's see, I can't do it. I used to be able to do the Elmer Fudd voice. I can't do it anymore.
Well, I hate that rabbit.
Oh, I hate that rabbit. Dagnabbit. Hey, Fred.
Oh, God.
You ever have a geek out moment? Like, I know I have numerous times.
He geeks out for his brother, Mike.
No. You geeked out for the Powers of Pain a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's because they're in all makeup, and you're like, oh, my God.
Dude, you were freaking drooling. You need a napkin when they walk by. Do you have a geek out moment?
Like a geek out moment?
Yeah, mine was, I was sitting there at the one ECW event where Carino worked Dusty in a bull rope match. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to him, and Dusty walks up and goes, all right, when are we doing this, baby? I'm going to go in the back of the bathroom. I'll see you later. Kind of like geeked out about that. It was cool, though. Sit there and talk to Dusty for a little bit.
But it's okay to geek out because in the world, we're all fans, too.
Right. Oh, yeah. Trust me. There's times I've gone in the back in the locker room and, hey, oh, my God, how are you? Like sitting there talking to Jerry Lynn in between matches working a show. That was really cool. But anyway, did you ever have a geek out moment?
Because he was.
Yeah. Look, and at the expense of sounding very cliche, I think every single time I have an interaction with somebody who I watched before was a geek out moment. Like, shit, you have to imagine. Now, mind you, I'm a local boy, right?
Yeah.
So right. I remember staying up watching ECW on Channel 48. I remember fanboying out to all those matches that you know,
the Philadelphia Sports Channel.
Exactly, dude.
3 o'clock in the morning.
3 o'clock in the morning, I was tuned in. So, you know, once I started my training and realized that I am being trained by the Blue Meanie, you know, this is the house that Chris Candido came from. This is the house that fucking so many greats that went to ECW came from.
Benoit, that Guerrero, knowing Malenko, that, Ray.
Yes, dude. When I met Brian, you know, I to this day, I'm like, damn, the Blue Meanie is an actual buddy of mine. Like, this guy had a hand in training me. You know, when I met Al Snow, who trained Meanie, I was like, hey, you know, I'm technically like your grand student. And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, well, Brian, you know, he was one of the trainers at the Monster Factory when I came up. And he was like, oh, yeah, he was like very, you know, very ecstatic about it. Oh, yeah, he's such a good dude. You know, you'll learn a lot from him, especially since I trained him. Craig, I love Al Snow. He was a pleasure to speak with. But geek out moments, I would have to probably say, oh, shit, man. Probably, I think I'm going to have to narrow it down. But if I have to narrow it down to the finest compound, I don't think I can. I'm gonna toss up two of these, all right?
Okay.
So the first one being just sharing the locker room with Scott Hall.
That's pretty cool.
Razor Ramon was very intricate in my childhood as far as, like, somebody who, like, a wrestler that, put it this way, you know, I'm a kid who knew shit about kayfabe. This, when I found out, I was an adult when I found out Razor Ramon was a white guy that stands well. So I'm like, number one, this Razor Ramon guy, mean streets of Miami, he's an Islander like me, and he came up from nothing, and now he's doing big things in the WWF. And he's a Hispanic. That's representation. That makes me want to do this more.
Do you know what he based that character on?
Yeah, it was Scarface.
Yeah, he based that character on Scarface. That whole character was Scarface.
Yeah, it was all Scarface, but McMahon never saw the movie, so he just ate it up right. And he ran with it. But yeah, but like I said, I was intrigued, the entire character, his whole style, everything. You know, you'll see elements of it in my moves. You'll see elements of it in the way I act. I got to share a locker room with him last year. Brief interaction, but just the fact that he was standing right there, and I'm like, yo, I emulated. Like, I fucking did shit. Your ladder match with Shawn Michaels is top three for me. Like, you know, just being in his presence was really, really cool. Now, another one that was most recent was when I met Sandman before. Him and I, we got to meet at, we met at House of Hardcore years ago. We hung out. I met him a few times. He came out the Ring of Honor. So we were past the formality. We got to see each other again back this past October September at AAW in Chicago. But this was on a different level. I didn't just get to hang out with him because I happened to be at the show. I was part of the fucking show. So he comes out and Singapore canes me and my tag partner. Like, dude, when they told me that the Sandman's gonna cane me, I was fucking, that was it for me. I geeked out. I was like, dude, I'm about to get caned by the Sandman. Like, I literally remember when the Singapore cane was a big thing in the news and how he adopted that whole fucking thing. So, like, to be able to be hit by the Sandman's cane, yeah, fuck that. I was so hyped.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So, that you had mentioned the WrestleMania ladder match, so that leads into the next question. For me, that's one of my top three. So the question is, top three favorite matches of all time.
And top three matches of your career.
There you go.
All time. So we want to know your three favorite and then your three favorite.
I'm going to have to say, in no particular order either.
Doesn't matter. We're gonna
find that ladder match is up there. Just the storytelling in it, man. It wasn't just a bunch of spots for the sake of doing spots. Everything had meaning. You know, from the moment that you know, they stepped in the ring. Then when Sean hurt his ankle, you know, on the outside with the barricade and shit, like, everything was so genuine and to the point, and the story, the back and forth. It wasn't your typical match as far as the way it was formatted, but it was formatted to the point where it was entertaining and it connected with the audience and told that story and relayed that whole, the whole passion behind the entire, you know, storyline. I mean, so that's up there.
That's what made me come up with that question of how did we get here? Like, you watched the whole storyline of how the build-up was for that match. Like, you don't see it anymore. So what would be the second one?
Second one, I'd have to put up there, I want to say, I don't know if it's, I'm going to probably confuse the pay-per-views, but it's Perfect and Hart. So Kurt Hennig and Bret Hart.
91 SummerSlam?
SummerSlam 91, yeah.
SummerSlam 91. Yeah, it is 91. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because 92 was Wembley Stadium. So, yeah.
Right.
91.
That's my favorite.
Yo, that one, I like that one.
When you take that match and break it down, and just watch it, just as a wrestling fan and as an enthusiast, just look at the technical stuff. Like, not even, nobody's doing a flip. Nobody's doing a moonsault. No fucking amazing fucking mind-blowing spot. Everything is pretty simple, but not simple in a way that it's making fun of it or taking away from what they're doing. But it's simple in the sense that it's like, it reads like a like instruction, you know? It's not an overcomplicated thing. That match just runs so smoothly, and it's not just what they do, but how they do it. Everything, it's transitionally, it just rolls smooth. The story rolls smooth, and the ending, there's a big payoff. So that's definitely up there in my top.
I mean, Perfect's probably the best technical wrestler in history, my book.
Yes, yes. I'm there with Daniel Bryan. I'll say that. Right. I'm there with Bryan Danielson. I mean, Dean Malenko. See, they just keep coming. I'm not even going to start because I'll just keep going. But yeah, 100%. Kurt Hennig is definitely up there.
That match was one of my favorites of all time.
Right. I mean, I popped when he showed up at WrestleMania 9, so.
Oh, yeah, 100%, man.
Yeah.
I wish things would have, you know, been different, obviously, but yeah, that would have been a career that would have extended way longer.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So what was your third favorite match?
Man, so I got about two or three I'm juggling in my head. I think I'm going to go with, I'd be remiss not to mention, and again, people will debate this with me, Hulk Hogan, Rock, WrestleMania 17. Not for anything that was done as far as moves, but simply the storyline and the audible that was called in that match.
Yeah, I remember that promo that led into that.
Yes, it was a switch. They had to make a quick switch, and it looked so fucking good. Yeah. And the emotion was there, and they were able to work that on the fly. That, to me, is fascinating. The match, to have a top match, you don't necessarily have to be the one with the fanciest or the crazy group, in my opinion. I think that it's what you convey. It's what you put out there that creates the memory. You know, a lot of people, especially these days, they create moments. I want to create a memory. I want something that you're not going to forget as far as the talk, as soon as it comes off of your timeline. I don't want something that you're going to forget when you go home and take a shit after the show.
Yeah.
I want something that's going to stick out and you're going to be like, wow, that dude Rico's a fucking asshole. He just said, hey, man, anytime they hear the name Rico or De La Vega or something, or anytime they talk about their experience in wrestling, if they're a casual fan and it was their first show, I guarantee you that they're going to run back and tell their buddies, hey, man, we used to watch wrestling back in the day. I went to a show. There was this jerk named Rico just talking to shit, you know, with his little, his pretty boy hair and this, that, the other thing. Dude, I've heard it.
But it got you over.
Right. And again, and I say these things humbly, man. And I only use myself as an example because I can only speak for myself, not for the next guy.
Yeah.
But I do these things so that I can stick out like a sore thumb in somebody's head. Not that night. I want this memory to last them for a fucking while. Not just as, you know, when the gift just leaves your fucking Twitter feed and then you're done.
So what about your top three favorite matches, the ones that you were involved in?
I think my top three favorite matches, I would have to say, would be top three. So, again, no particular order.
Nope, no particular order.
I would have to say my very first match, simply because it was thrown together. So here's a story before I get into that. It's not much of a story, but obviously I went to wrestling school because I wanted to become a wrestler.
Right.
The factory and everybody, they found out that I was a good talker from the gate. You know, you don't teach that. That's just something natural. So, you know, you don't go to wrestling school to learn to talk. So once they found out that, you know, I was powerful on the mic, you know, Danny Pitch, he was like, hey, yeah, man, you could definitely talk, that's for sure. I remember QT and Damien, they pitched to Danny. I was like, hey, dude, why don't you let them manage us? You know, and that's when real life heals. I started managing them because I could go toe-to-toe on the stick. I could cut their promos. They could look badass. I could look badass as their advocate, so to speak. Then we brought on Riddle. That fucking made it a fucking phenomenon.
Monster Factory Tag Team Champions.
Absolutely. Now, the first match that I had was me tagging with QT and tagging with Louis, with Damian, and versus, I want to say it was Mike Spanos. It was Mike Spanos, Clutch Adams, and Cliff Compton. So Cliffy was there. I love that match. Again, not because it was a barn burner, but just because, you know, it was my first match, and I didn't touch the ring but twice. Right. And it was just for me to go in. They tagged me in. I did a few stunts. I came back out. Then it was a fuck finish. So they basically, you know, they wailed on one of them. You know, everybody got bumped out to the outside, and they hit the finisher on the other one. I want to say it was Spanos. Tagged me in, and I took the pin. And I fucking pinned I believe at that time, they got the championships from Spanos and Clutch Adams. So, yeah, so I pinned Spanos, and they got the titles at that time.
Okay.
You guys hear me?
Yes.
Perfectly.
Okay.
I was just making...
We're paying attention.
No, that's cool. I thought I lost you guys. But no.
Nope.
You know, that's why it's one of my favorite matches. Like I said, it's the first one, but without me even being that involved, I was still involved enough where people knew my name and people remember that fuck finish. And they remember that I am the one that pinned for the MFBW Tag Team Championship.
That's pretty cool.
I remember you were up at Titan at one point, so I remember you from there.
Where at?
Titan.
Titan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just there last year. That was the last time I was over there.
Yeah,
that's a good time.
Where were you with Benjamin King?
Yeah. We actually have the group now called the Division.
Division, yes.
Yeah.
There we go.
So we're all involved in that. So, looking forward to go back there at some point. That's the one. Let's see, second match that I'm really, really, that I really like is, my goodness. Oh, you know what? I really enjoyed the match that I had with, it was me. A lot of people know I have a tag team. I'm part of a tag team out in Chicago for AAW. We're known as La Sociedad Boricua. My tag partner, Axel Rico, and myself, we were putting a handicap match against Impact Jake Something. So we had Jake Something in a handicap match, and, you know, we got up on him for a little bit, but then he ended up demolishing us. He put us through a door the whole nine. But again, it's story-driven. The story, we're a couple of assholes. We were antagonizing everybody. Getting on people's fucking nerves. So here comes Jake Something answering a challenge that we really didn't want him to answer, but he answered, he delivered. The people went home happy because we got our ass. The story was there.
So
everything, the seeds were planted. So
as long as they went home happy.
I would throw that in there. Absolutely, man. They're the ones that buy the merch. They're the ones that pay for the ticket. They're the ones that I want to please. Fuck if you want to get your little fucking, you know, bullshit over. Let's make sure that it's going to be for the benefit of them as opposed to the benefit of your ego. But I digress. That's a whole different conversation. But
number three.
The third match that I probably would put in my top three is going to be... It's a tough one because it's like using your last lifeline. You don't want to use it and then realize later, fuck, I should have said this.
Hey,
I mean, do you need to phone a friend?
I'll tell you this right now. In the future, you'll always be welcome to come on to the podcast. So if you go, I have an all-favorite match next time you come on.
Right.
Then we'll be like, okay.
Well, I mean, we could always phone a friend.
All right, bet. I'll just throw whichever at this point. As of now, I will use my match against same thing, La Sociedad Boricua, which is my group with Axel Rico. It was us versus the Golden Gods. The Golden Gods being, if you're familiar with Lucha, it's Gringo Loco and Golden Dragon.
Okay.
So, again, it's a little out of my element because, Lucha style is not my first language, so to speak, but I've been learning it little by little. And, luckily, I've been able to train at Galley Lucha Libre, which is, Brinko's actually there. Golden Dragon's actually part of the team there as well. So I've gotten to sit under, you know, their learning tree, as well as Aramis, Ares, a lot of, like, Lucha stars. So the match with them, I really, really enjoyed. Simply because it took me out of my element, out of my comfort level. Like, you know, play fighting in my underwear with my shirt off isn't enough.
With the cape on.
Yeah, for real. So basically, with them doing the lucha style and me having to adapt and like go along with it, I think that that helped challenge me and show me that I'm capable of doing that stuff. So I take that, you know, I take that and I hold that dearly simply because it was a learning experience and a growth experience for myself. So, you know, right. I have to throw that in there.
Yeah. Right. So we're going to do our final question.
It's the final question.
That is so horrible. So
he laughed, though.
Yeah, he did laugh over there. Yeah, Mr. George,
I love easy music puns.
Say, so, Riku got it.
So you got it?
Yeah. What's so the final question is, when you're working out and stuff like that, what do you listen to? Like, what do you got in your ear?
Music.
Bro, so my workouts, they last like roughly around an hour and a half. Cardio, 20 minutes. I'm watching wrestling matches on YouTube. When I get on it, I just put the iPhone, my phone on shuffle. There's no set genre because I will be listening to the Final Countdown. You know, I'll go from them to Rock You Like a Hurricane to fucking to some Marvin Gaye to some Spanish reggaeton, some Bad Bunny to Bad fucking Bunny. 90s hip hop to, you know, I even do Johnny Cash. I'll do some Merle Haggard. I'll do some fucking, you know, Hank Williams.
Merle Haggard. Wow. You're the first person that I know that went classic country to work out with. That's pretty cool.
You, that's outlaw country. Right. I will do that shit. Like, the newer stuff, no, I don't really fuck with.
I saw Kane Brown the other night, so that was pretty cool.
You what?
I went to the Kane Brown concert. He's a country singer, yeah.
How was that?
Oh, it was fucking great.
Yeah, because I don't fuck with the new stuff, man. It's too pop for me. Right. And again, like I said, that outlaw country, another analogy here. It's like the new country, to me, is like wrestling without the storyline. It's just songs with wangy boys just to get people dance. When Cash is doing it, when Hank is doing it, it's like, hey, we're talking about something here, whether it's addiction, whether it's I'm going to fucking shoot somebody or I'm feeling like ass, I might shoot myself.
Garth
They're
Brooks.
Talking about something. There's a story behind it. So, yeah, I fuck with that heavy.
Right, like when you listen to Garth Brooks. Garth Brooks has got that story behind some of his songs.
Okay. No, so, yeah, that'd probably be something I'd look into. But, I'll have to check it out, but throw it on the mix. But yeah, man, I go all over the place.
Yeah, I mean.
But usually I need something upbeat, but I can go with something upbeat. I can't do it in between. I'll either go something very upbeat or I'll take something like, you know, like 90s R&B to work out with. So it's either one or the other. I can never find, like, no problem.
And mine is kind of funny because mine goes from maybe like Aerosmith to Anthrax to Metallica to Pantera to the Monkees to CNC Music Factory to Johnny Cash to like what he just hit shuffle. It can be one of the most heaviest, loudest, aggressive songs, and then all of a sudden the Monkees come on.
So I don't work out. So my
People
music
say they
is
monkey
nothing.
Around.
Right.
So, do you have any social media for the fans to find you?
Yeah, I got tons of social media. You're going to find me on IG and Twitter. It's going to be @RealRicoDLV, last initials of my last name. You can find me on Facebook, Rico de la Vega. I think that's all the socials, right? I'm not too keen on what they are, but definitely. I'm all over the place. I'm active on Twitter. I'm active on Facebook. I'm active on Instagram. Twitter and Instagram more so. But, you know, I interact. I have an open door policy, you know, as long as everything's respectful. I'll definitely love to chop it up with people.
That is very, very cool. You know, you're always welcome when you come down this way and you want to go get a pizza. We got a good pizza place in Delaware, so you're always welcome to join us. Yeah, I got good pizza. You know what I mean? I don't lie about pizza. Necro Butcher.
What part of Delaware?
North Wilmington.
Okay. Oh, shit. Yeah, you're like 20 minutes from the factory.
Yeah. So Necro Butcher, he came down like for Icons, and my friend asked me to take him back to Harrisburg. And I was like, yeah, sure. He paid me to take him back. I was like, we're waiting for Slack to like get back to him because he wanted to get a tattoo. And then he's like, hey, you want to stop at a pizza place? He goes, I'm not really hungry, but I was like, I am because I haven't eaten yet. But you're saying how good it is, I'll try it. And I'm like, okay, cool. I took him there, and then he's on his third piece. And he's like, oh my gosh, this is the best pizza. So I got Necro's approval on that one. So if you come out this way, we'll stop by the pizza place. They love having wrestling fans.
So I just pulled you up on my Facebook wall, sent you a friend request. Apparently, we have 235 mutual friends, me and Rico.
And I bet I'm one of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going Yeah, shit ton of people I know. Great people.
Yeah, Attaway. Hey, Attaway, Preacher, my man.
O-Dog, you're friends with Dog. Yeah.
And again.
A lot of great people. I'll be working with Josh Adams on Saturday.
And again, you are when we bring people on the 2300 Wrestling, and sometimes I forget to say it sometimes, you become part of our family. So welcome to the family.
Thanks, brothers. I appreciate it. I love being a part of good things.
Oh, yeah. And this is a good thing.
So we're going to hit a button. We're going to hit a button, and it's going to say,
ladies and gentlemen, thank you. And this has been the 2300 Wrestling Podcast. I'm Dave Keener alongside DB Richards, and we'll see you in the ring. And ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Rico de la Vega. I can't do that roll off the tongue, so sorry.
Bueno, mi gente, my name is Rico de la Vega, and right now you're listening to the 2300 Wrestling Podcast. And if you're listening to this podcast, it must mean you heard that I was going to be on it, because the majority of you listening out there obviously have no good taste. Hasta luego. Hey, boys, cut the check.
Sam Alfalzi here.
And Zach Ravix.
Super Crazy Wrestling, Super Crazy Arena, Skid Row Academy. We are indeed the best facility in New Jersey. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, probably no doubt. In the world. Extremely top three, I would say. We have very terrific trainers. Actually, they all come from the Ring of Honor Dojo, so yeah. You already know you're...
So they're going to be great, and they're definitely great.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're going to experience some, you know, pretty elite stuff. You know, we're all about intensity here. You know, we're always here to help. We're always reach one, teach one. That's our main thing. You know, I feel like if you're a person that really feels like wrestling is your dream and that's what you want to accomplish, this is the best school to come to.
Or burn.
Okay. What Brack said.
So, once again, you know, best school probably in the world. Definitely in Jersey. You can find it. You can find it on Facebook, Super Crazy Wrestling and Skid Row Academy. And Instagram, Super Crazy Wrestling, Skid Row Academy. You can contact Melissa Pena or O-Dog, and he'll come find you if you don't find him.
Or I will.
Or
Brax.
Or Brax.
You'll burn. No, you won't burn.